Well, my goodness, are we getting straight to business today? Woo! Welcome to Puck Culture, Jackie Redmond. Happy to be hanging out with Mike Johnson. And minutes before coming into the studio to record this podcast, we find out that the Vegas Golden Knights have fired head coach Gerard Gallant and hired former head coach of the San Jose Sharks, Peter DeBoer, who has been unemployed for about 30 or more days.
34 days.
There you go.
The same number of days that John Hines was unemployed for.
What is happening?
This one, it's been a weird season for coaches. There's been a lot of surprises, and a lot of stuff's been going on. As surprising as all those other things were, this one, Gerard Gallant getting let go in Vegas, strikes me as the most shocking. Really. Because you think about the great story that Vegas has become for the NHL.
Stanley Cup Final 2 years ago.
On the ice, first year expansion team, Stanley Cup Final, one of the best teams in the league in the West last year, even though they lost a heartbreaking first round series. Once again, one of the better teams in the West, even though they think they're underachieving right now, having lost a few games in a row. He was as much a part of that story as any player.
Yeah.
And it was probably Marc-Andre Fleury, then Gerard Gallant, then the other players, you know, that were there as well. And he was so instrumental in taking that group and having them believe and put in a system and having them be successful, to think that he's fired less than a couple of years later when this team was in first place 2 weeks. He's like all-star coach.
I know. What do they do there? I think, the next man up?
Would it be whoever was second on that day,
or
whoever's second today, or whoever's in first today, Rick Tocchet? Or can he go if he wants? He earned the right to go.
I mean, not only everything you just said, but then he's replaced by someone that I'm pretty sure he referred to as a clown last year, and who is the former head coach of arguably Vegas's biggest or most heated, at least, rival.
For sure. Pete DeBoer, San Jose Sharks, formerly of.
I mean, I don't know about everybody else. I assume everyone else had the same reaction I did, which was just the mind-blown emojis.
Yeah. So as
did
far
not
as,
expect it.
Well, as far as the Pete DeBoer, San Jose angle going to Vegas, that doesn't really matter to the players.
Sure.
Like, we kind of look past that kind of idea.
I suppose.
You know, you can't coach Montreal, then go coach Toronto. You can't coach Boston, then go to Montreal. Like,
you know who it matters to? The fans.
The fans,
no,
right. But
kidding.
For the players,
it
doesn't really resonate the same way. He's just another coach coming in, so I don't know if that matters. But, I mean, I think you have to just, I sit there and I try to make sense of things, Jack. You know what I try to do.
I know what you do. News broke to me. I was like, well, we have a good guy on the podcast today because he will have immediate thoughts, opinions, questions.
Yes.
As we all do. I mean, now listen, we're recording this, I'm not even exaggerating, minutes after this has come out. So maybe there's more to this story. Mm-hmm. But I would think after everything that has gone on this season off the ice regarding behavior, that there would be something in that initial statement to at least allude to the fact that maybe there's more to this decision than hockey. But it doesn't sound that way based on the statement that was released.
On some level, I hope there's not more.
Same. Gerard Gallant has a great reputation.
Loved around the league. His players really like playing for him. So I hope it's just a hockey decision. And one we can break down and kind of pick through and see what we think of it. But when I think of the job, so let's just assume it's just a hockey decision. Because that's all we know. So it's all we can go on.
Yes.
And it's weird this year that we have to have this kind of...
It's unfortunate, but it is what it is.
Tagline before we discuss a coaching change. But you look at that team, who are 3 points out of first still, in their division. But they're clumped in with a whole bunch of teams, kind of at 57 to 54 points. They're out of the playoffs right now. So you look at the kind of the underlying numbers. I had a quick glance through them, and Vegas are really strong again. Their expected goal for differential, which is, you know, kind of takes out some of the noise of hot shooting and hot goaltending and cold shooting. They're second in the league.
The advanced metrics for them are good, right?
Their process stats are excellent. It's third in the league in their shot shares, fourth in the league in their high danger shares. So they're playing well 5-on-5. You know where they're not doing well? They're 25th in the league in 5-on-5 save percentage. Their goalies haven't been good. We love Marc-Andre Fleury. Everybody loves Marc-Andre Fleury. He missed some time, of course, this year. Backup goaltending has been inconsistent at best. And Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't been as good as he was in years past. I have a hard time understanding how much of that is on the coach. When you're doing everything right to give your team a chance to win, and a one position that you can't really control how well the goalie stops the puck as a head coach, if it's coming up short a little bit. And it probably will naturally regress back to better now that Pete DeBoer's taken over. He'll get all the credit for it. I'm not sure how much credit he'll deserve for that. I don't see a case other than we think a new voice will startle this group. This change will slap this group.
Which is what this statement makes it sound like, right? Is they wanted to shake things up.
And you can't
new
change
voice,
the players,
new message.
So.
But it's not like Gerard Gallant's been there for five, 6 years. I mean, he's in his third season.
And what happened to the plucky bunch that were all castaways and were like binding together and in it together? Like they shouldn't be worn out of a coach that has, and all those guys that have had great success on the ice and now great success financially. So many of those guys that were expansion team pickups now have nice juicy contracts, in large part because Gerard Gallant put them in spots to do really well. So it feels like, Jackie, that it's less about what they're doing on the ice that they need to change.
Yeah.
And more about that they're going through a rut and they're making a change to shock the group.
Here's my response to that, though. Like, we talk all the time about how it's inevitable. It's an 82-game season. Even the best teams,
yes,
will go through a rut. Like, a 4-game losing streak is not ideal. You don't want to see a 4-game losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
But it happens. It happens to the best teams, unless you're Tampa Bay last year,
right,
breaking records.
Right.
So, to me, it just doesn't add up, unless maybe Peter DeBoer is just somebody that Kelly McCrimmon and the staff in Vegas really look at as such a good coach that they just had to bring him in.
He's not Scotty Bowman, Jackson.
That's what I mean, said.
He's a good coach, but he's not. Let's not get carried away.
He's not Hall of Fame. He's not, you know.
You know, he's a good coach. But so was Gerard Gallant. You have a good coach. I'm curious to hear what Kelly McCrimmon, when he's asked, why? What does he say? When we read the presser,
yeah,
he said,
the release,
we've underachieved, and we feel that we need a new voice to get them going, or something to that effect.
Yes, which I would understand if they were near the bottom of the league, if Gallant had been there for more than 2.5 seasons, if he didn't have the reputation of somebody that is very, very, very well liked by his players. For you as a former player, when the guys in the room really like the mm-hmm. coach, and then he's fired, it's one thing if you're last place in the league, you're bottom five in the league, right? You know it's coming.
Yep.
And you know it's inevitable.
Yep.
But when you're literally just outside the playoff picture and a couple of points out of being first in your division, what impact could that possibly have on the players who, as you've already noted, have gone through a lot with Gerard Gallant at the helm?
They will be either angry or motivated, or some combination of that.
Right.
Because I think, no matter what you do, whatever job it is, you know, it's easy to kind of fall into the rhythm of your job. And maybe just, you kind of just, you're going, and the NHL is no different. There's days you just kind of go through it, and you're grinding along, the season's going along, and it's not going quite as well as you want, but you're going through it.
Yeah.
And I think this change will maybe shock the group to motivate them to not just go through it anymore. Like they can't just kind of cruise along thinking it'll all sort itself out and we'll win enough games because we're supposed to, we're doing mostly good things and we're a good team, so it's gonna be fine. So that motivation tack angle is what they're going for. I mean, that's what they're hoping happens.
Right.
But there's also the chance and the likelihood that guys are pissed off. Guys are angry that they think this guy who they like, that they've had great success with, that has done a good job this year, is now not there. And their existence may get a little different. Like, it might not be quite as pleasant, quite as nice with Pete DeBoer there, or any coach for that matter. So, you know, there will be a mixed bag of emotions. And there's doesn't last forever, mm-hmm. but there'll be a little bit of guilt there. There'll be guilt that they will carry, thinking, this guy who believed in us when much of the hockey
who
world
brought
didn't.
Brought us together in a weird time.
And allowed and helped us achieve something that no one thought was possible. We let him down when he believed in us. And that will sting. I mean, it's for some people it'll resonate. It will sting.
Now listen, I'm on the outside of this. I'm not in Vegas every day. I'm not around the Vegas Golden Knights every day. But it seems to me like Gallant wasn't really given a fair shot at turning this thing around, which honestly isn't going completely in the wrong direction. It's just kind of like they're middling, you know?
They're
just kind of wobbling. So to me, it's like, I just feel like he didn't get a fair shake, and I feel like Gerard Gallant never gets a fair shake. You know, it's like, you know, the whole taxi cab incident in Florida, right. And now, you know, a year and a half removed from playing in June in a Stanley Cup final. With an expansion team and a cast of players that nobody wanted, because that's what it is now unemployed, although it might not be for long based on the way things have transpired this season. But let's get to our guest. He's no stranger to having to deal with breaking news. He covers both hockey and baseball for DAZN, for MLB Network, and for NHL Network. Our good friend and movie lover, Adnan Virk. Adnan, is there anything better in media than covering a story as it's happening when you don't have all the details?
Breaking news is the best, Jack. Pleasure to be with you guys. It's funny, a friend of mine used to be a broadcaster, and then he became an actor, and he said the one thing he missed about broadcasting was live TV. He said, you know, when you're acting, it's take after take after take, it's just monotonous. He said, as we know in broadcasting, when it's live, hey, one day, if it doesn't work, well, it's off to Pluto. And you're right, in terms of breaking news, it's great because you go, well, I think it's this, or maybe it's this, and it gets the blood pumping, you know what I mean? We never, obviously, it's sad news, everyone loses their job, of course, in the case of Gerard Gallant and what happened with Vegas. But yes, I'm with you. Breaking news is the best.
It is the best. It gets you riled up, and it's when things make you think. I like that, Adnan. I like when I don't quite understand something, have to think about it. And that's how I'm feeling about this Gerard Gallant situation. For all the success that organization has had with him as their head coach, does it strikes me as premature to make this change this quick, when it's not about loyalty, it's just about the reality. They've been really good with him as the head coach. What do you think about just the timing of it, given that they're just 3 points out of first and 1 point out of the playoffs?
And this guy's supposed to be at the All-Star game in 2 weeks.
He was supposed to be the head coach of the All-Star team in a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's baffling. As Jackie mentioned, I also cover baseball, and I still can't believe how harsh the suspensions are for the Astros management. And in this case, exactly what you guys just said. Vegas, we all know they got off to a bad start. Of course, a bad first month of the season, and clearly nothing was working out for them, but clearly have turned it around. And my thinking, when something like this happens, when the team appears to be pretty good, and Gerard Gallant has had a lot of success there, there must be something happening in terms of, you know, not being on the right page in terms of direction of the franchise. Meaning, hey, maybe they're looking to sign certain players. He doesn't want them. They want to develop certain young players. He doesn't, et cetera. I don't know specifics of it, but that's always my feel. Whenever I hang on, the team's doing good. Remember Hextall and the Flyers? I was like, hey, the Flyers are going in the right direction. They've drafted a great young core defenseman. They've got a goalie in Carter Hart. And then Hextall got fired. And I said, okay, fine. Philadelphia was off to a slow start, but why would you gas him? And then the story came out that Hextall and management just wasn't on the same page. He wanted to be a little more slower in terms of the kind of were frustrated. The team wasn't doing well. So that's my guess on it. But, yeah, we will have to find out more information to be specific.
And, yeah, you know,
there's a bit of history there with Gallant, because he did butt heads with Florida because they were going an analytical movement. He wasn't really buying into it quite as much, and there was some discord there. But I'm not sure why there'd be discord in Vegas. They've done so incredibly well.
Well, there must be, because we're getting word now, because, again, this broke as we were walking into the studio, that Vegas has now come out and confirmed this is strictly performance-based. There is no off-ice issue.
Good.
There's no character issue, which I'm happy to hear, because Gerard Gallant has a sparkling reputation in the hockey world, and it's unfortunate that we live in a time where you have to ask, is there more to this story that has nothing to do with the actual sport itself? But that being said, that's really the only logical explanation. And they go and they hire Peter DeBoer, who's a great coach, but who was also at the helm of a San Jose Sharks team that fell off a cliff this year compared to last season. So it's a crazy time. I mean, everyone in hockey is getting fired. I believe he's the seventh head coach to get fired, and everyone in baseball apparently is cheating.
Hang
so,
on,
you know,
Adnan.
What a time to be alive, guys.
I'm going back to what you just said. You're surprised at the severity of the baseball. Are you kidding me, Adnan? Surprised they got suspended for a year?
Listen, this is a sport in which they always say, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
No, but there's differences, though, Adnan. Listen.
Guys have been stealing signs for 150 years. The shot heard around the world, the most famous home run of all time, they say, they're stealing signs there. So if a guy's on second base and he can relay the sign, then all of a sudden he's a genius. But if you're using video equipment, you're a criminal. Now, you can't use video equipment. I get that, and that's wrong. Absolutely. Punishment. But a year, PEDs, when they were first suspending steroid guys, they'd get 10 games. 10 games, and now they get 80.
That's a good point.
Secondly, so my point is that I just think it's so draconian in comparison to other punishment the league has given out. Go ahead.
Well, my take is this.
Go ahead.
if you're on second base, you can see the signs and relay them to your batter. That's fine, because anybody playing the game in that game ballpark can do that. If you rig up your home park so you have all these fancy AV equipments to bang on drums to let people know what's coming, and the other team doesn't have that opportunity because you're using extra technology, I'm sorry, that is completely, completely different to me than, you know, even like pine tar on your baseball cap or whatever like that. It's just
cheating is cheating.
Well, this one feels a little bit more. I was pleased. I'm like, 1 year, that's good. I'm happy. I wish they could find him 50. I wish they could make him vacate the title. I wish you could no longer say that Houston won in 2017. You don't have to give it to anyone, but I'd be happy to do that. The steroid thing is a whole nother conversation because it wasn't really illegal in baseball, albeit illegal in society. You know, it was kind of tolerated, so there's a bit more gray area there. But I would be happy if they could, if they vacated Houston's title. To me, I'm like, throw the book at them.
They do that in the NCAA, which is true. People are saying, well, hang on, you could do that with, you know.
USC? I don't think USC has a title from Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart's years.
Like 2005.
Well,
like,
let's get Lance Armstrong on the phone, see how he feels about stripping titles. Classic. All right. Well, you know what? The way that things are going, to bring it back to hockey for a second, with Gerard Gallant being fired by the Vegas Golden Knights. You know, the trend now is in 35 days, Montreal will call him up and they'll hire him or some other team.
What about Detroit? Steve Eiser and him, line mates.
Ooh, there's a connection.
That's a great call. That is a great call. Because when I think Gerard Gallant, I'm so old, I think of him on left wing at Joe Louis Arena all the years. And
that's
it. Him and Eiserman, that's a great connection. Red Wings fans, God, Detroit needs some hope, some optimism. You always see teams trying to go back to the past. And obviously, he's a great coach. That's a great call.
Let's let the speculation begin, shall we? Because he's a good coach.
Don't want to do the Jeff Blashill, who's still the coach in
Detroit.
I know,
right? Jeff, I hope you're not listening.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not. It's okay. I feel bad for Gerard. I think he's a good coach. But let's move on because, Adnan, I have spent the last 48 hours listening to my co-host on NHL Now rant and rave about Adam Sandler being snubbed by the Oscars, and you are the movie guy around these parts. So I got to get your take. Did Adam Sandler get snubbed in the Oscar nominations?
Well, let me start with this. He's terrific in the movie. Uncut Gems, I saw at the LA premiere a couple months ago, and he's such a disarming guy. And for the record, I'm not a huge Sandler fan. I love him in Punch Drunk Love, which is a great P.T. Anderson movie. But I'm not that guy watching Waterboy and Billy Madison over and over. But in this film, he was tremendous because he really plays a low life and a degenerate gambler. He's a thoroughly unlikable guy, but he's got that real restless energy that Sandler always brings to the screen. And the film was really well done by the Safdie brothers. So first and foremost, he's a great dude. I met him after the screening. I told him, listen, working in sports, you really nailed that whole essence of those gambling guys. He said, I appreciate that. I said, how about the fact Mike Francesa is in the movie not playing himself? He's playing a bookie. He said, well, they wanted Francesa to play himself because, I want to play one of these Italian hoodlums. Like, I want to be a gangster. And Sam was like, hey, whatever you want, man. Like, we'll do that. It's cool. Now, and as an issue of being snubbed, what happens is this, Jack, and I used to always do this. I'd say, oh, this is a crime. Why this person gets snubbed, et cetera, et cetera. So then I said, here's what you have to do. You have to watch all the movies because then you can thoroughly say, listen, I saw this. I believe objectively this is better than this. So let's go through the nominees. Jonathan Pryce and the Two Popes is tremendous. I had no idea what that movie was about. I knew it's about a couple of popes, obviously, judging by the title. 72 years old. He's never been nominated for an Oscar. He's tremendous playing Cardinal Bergoglio. It's about, you know, the issue of faith and modernity, and he's wonderful in the movie. So I'm happy Jonathan Pryce is nominated. Adam Driver, I believe he should win for Marriage Story. I thought it was the best performance of the actor this year. He's a lock. Leo in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Fantastic. Although you and I, Jackie, agree the movie isn't great, I do think Leo was very compelling.
The acting in that movie was spectacular. The movie itself,
So now you get left with a couple of slots, and you say, okay, well, who are you bumping out? And I will say this. I agree with you that Sandler was better at Uncut Gems than Joaquin Phoenix in Joker, because that's a movie that I think is horribly overrated.
Yes.
I thought his he's a great actor, Joaquin Phoenix, but that performance was... He was so mannered, and it was so many ticks, and it was so over the top. I said, it was just, you know, it's not called most acting. It's called best acting. And I actually didn't think Phoenix gave a great performance. So in order to your point, I would put Sandler out of Phoenix. But to be honest with you, before even Sandler came in, I would put De Niro in for The Irishman. That, to me, was the biggest snub. But Sandler was great. If you haven't seen Uncut Gems, you should go see it.
I actually haven't seen it yet, so I don't have an opinion on the Sandler snub. But...
The only reason I watched The Irishman is because this guy tweeted about it 3,000 times about what a great movie it was. Adnan basically forced me into watching it all 3 hours and 20 minutes of it. It was fine. It was good. It was.
MJ, you know me. Listen, there's one thing about me. You know that I'm relentless.
You're thorough, for sure.
Now, Johnny, you perked up when he said
the Joker
is overrated. You agree?
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, for such a 11 Academy Awards it was nominated for. Is that correct?
That's a lot.
Picture, director, actor, all the big ones. I thought it was just okay. I mean, I don't evaluate films the way Adnan does. But I watch it. I'm like, I appreciate that he was immersed in that character, and you believe that he was all messed up and as the Joker character was. But I wasn't blown away by the movie. Everyone talks about how great it was and how moving or how.
I thought it was a good movie. It was a good movie.
Ridiculous. But what I want to know, Adnan, I thought it was terrible. It was stupid.
Let me just make the point. One more point on Joker. This is the thing. When you think of the beginning of time, literally caveman in screenwriting school, what's the basic story? Boy gets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back. That movie, Joaquin Phoenix starts out unsettled and miserable, and that's the entire film. Like, it's about as subtle as a sledgehammer to the groin. He's just a miserable guy who shoots deer in the head, and then for some bizarre reason is then being lauded by people. Like, if he killed the Bernie Madoff type, I would understand that. He's killing the 1%. But why exactly is De Niro's character representative of the rich elite? Like, there's just no levels of depth to it.
Yeah, that's a strong point by someone that obviously critiques films and plots and character development and all the good stuff.
I wanted to bring it back to the sports, though, because wasn't Kevin Garnett in Hidden Gems?
Yeah,
he was. He's terrific in the movie.
So now, how was he as an actor? And if you kind of just off the top of your head, Jesus Shuttlesworth, Ray Allen, whoever it is, like, who's the best athlete turned performance in a real performance in a movie?
Ooh.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Ray Allen, Mike. I thought he was legitimately really good in that game. I thought he showed the fact that the character was homesick and issues with his father. And, you know, listen, you got Dr. J in The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh. You got Alex Karras, I believe, was in Blazing Saddles, a former football player. So there's a few over the years. But I wanted to mention specific to Garnett, because I talked to the Safdie brothers afterwards, the guys who directed. And we asked them, like, why'd you get Garnett? As you know, the movie is set, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. I think it's 2008, as a matter of fact, when the Celtics were really in their prime. Like, why'd you get Garnett? Like, how did that happen? And they said, you know, there were such huge New York guys. And as you know, the movie is New York set. They wanted to get Amari Stoudemire. But Stoudemire wasn't able to do it. And then they're like, all right, who's another big name of that era? And they pitched it to Garnett and wanted to do it. But
wow.
You can think of it afterwards. It's so odd. It's such a New York movie, right? It's about New York. And you're like, why the hell is Kevin Garnett? But regardless, I would say Ray Allen's a pretty good one, man. As far as, like, really good actors, I mean, Burt Reynolds famously was a football player. God, he was at Florida State. And was a terrific football player. So I would throw him, and I would say Mark Harmon, who was great at USC, great quarterback turned actor. But as far as athletes turned actors, I would go with Ray Allen.
All right, I like that. Jesus Shuttlesworth. I like it. I can dig it. I have to ask you, as the movie critic, what's your favorite movie of all time, or do you hate that question?
The Irishman. It better be The Irishman, Adnan.
Johnny knows I'm all over the Irishman. No, it's Goodfellas, Jackie, just because to me it's a movie that could be a lot of different things. I think it's a great black comedy. It's obviously a mob film. It's just a great dramatic film. I think it has a lot of romance in it with Henry and Karen, especially when he's seducing her and he first takes her in the copa. Like, I think it has all different elements of movies. And it's a real love letter to movies. I mean, just I think the music and the era of the 50s and 60s. And the first half of the film is seductive. You know, it draws you into the world of being a mobster. And then the second half is frightening. And when Henry's, you know, Hill is seeing airplanes chasing him and the paranoia and the cocaine catches up to him. I just think that's a real adrenaline thrill of the film. Goodfellas is the kind of movie that makes you want to go make movies or maybe just go hijack a truck.
Either one, I guess. That's a good movie.
It is a good movie.
So many of those movies are. I know you're a big, you know, De Niro, Pacino, that whole genre, Adnan. It seems that it resonates with you, whether it's Goodfellas or
Love Goodfellas,
or the Irishman, or whatever the other ones. You know, so many of these ones are kind of similar in the similar vein. Do you enjoy them all? Those kind of mobstery kind of movies when they have the caliber of cast that you were drawn to.
I do, Johnny. But I'll tell you this: there's a really big difference. I find. You know, if you watch a comedy, you know, even a bad comedy will give you a couple of good moments, right? Like, if you just like Will Ferrell and you watch Get Hard, it's not a great movie, but there's a couple of laughs in it.
That's right.
But I'll tell you, a bad mob movie is, like, laughably bad. Like, there's a huge difference when you're watching it. It's, okay, this is a really good crime film, whether or not it's, you know, Casino or Mean Streets or something like that, or it's, like, Gotti with John Travolta. Like, a bad mob movie, you're like, oh, my God, it's like wretched acting. Very over the top, very, like, you know, tough guys acting on the accent. So I find with mob movies, as much as I like the genre, when it's bad, you know it's a stinker early on. It's tough to get through.
I love it. I love it. For all of our listeners out there, Adnan, that are big movie fans, where can they find your podcast?
The shameless plug, Redmond. You are the best.
You know it.
You can check it out. How about that? Johnny mentioned the first time we were doing NHL Tonight together, he got a Cinephile plug, which I don't think Josh Bernstein is forgiveness about. But you can get Cinephile on Apple Podcasts, CINEPHILE. Please do subscribe, rate, and review. And kudos to Jackie, who's being very humble in the fact she hasn't seen a couple of movies. Of the 20 nominees for Best Actor, Actress, Supporting Actor, Supporting Actress, there's 20 nominations, I should say. Excuse me, Scarlett Johansson actually got nominated double, both for lead and supporting. 20 nominations. I've only missed one of them. So I've seen 19 of the 20 nominees.
Wow.
The one I'm missing is my girl Jackie. She saw Richard Jewell and Kathy Bates got nominated for Best Supporting Actress. So you
listen,
got one off the pair.
So love Kathy Bates. She's incredible in it, as she is in pretty much everything that she does. The movie itself I thought was really good. It felt like it was building. And then it just ended. It was just like you're frustrated. You're watching this guy get screwed by the police.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, I mean, I don't want to play spoiler, but I will because I don't care.
Google the story.
Essentially, they're just like, they walk in one day, they hand him a piece of paper, and they're like, yeah, you're good. You're clear. Like, that's how the movie ends. I'm like, what? We've been building this up for a scene in a diner where you hand him a piece of paper, and you're like, yeah, you're good.
But that's how it ends in real life. Then what are you going to do?
I don't know. Make it a little more dramatic. Make me feel something.
Well, you clearly felt something because, listen, you're talking about it now.
I was so disappointed with the way it ended. Because you know why? Because the first half was so good.
Yeah.
I was legitimately watching this, and I was hating characters. I was loving characters. I was pulling for people. And then I just didn't feel the payoff in the end.
All
and
that
I
invested
should.
Energy.
Especially when it's based on a true story. Mm-hmm. I should feel some sort of payoff. And I didn't really feel that.
Jack, I want to ask you about the Olivia Wilde character, because that hurt the movie. You know, it opened only at $3.7 million. That's the second lowest to Clint Eastwood in the last 40 years. Only Bronco Billy had a lower opening at $3.7 million. And some people say the reason is people were very upset that Olivia Wilde's character in the movie, apparently is a journalist, and she sleeps with a key character to get some information, and that's not true. And people were incensed and said, do not support this movie. That is a terrible way to depict somebody when it's not true.
Yeah, they did not portray the reporter well at all. And because it's based on a true story, I think it's understandable why people would react that way. But at the same time, like, it is a movie. It's made for entertainment purposes. So,
reporter that was being portrayed is now died. So I don't think she's alive anymore to even defend herself.
See,
is
that
she?
I don't know.
I read that she could, because if that person actually existed in real life and they're still alive,
not everyone does their research, right? Like, not everybody would go and look and be like, oh, is that actually true? They might just assume that that actually happened.
She's dead, to my point. She can't speak up for herself.
Right.
Yeah. So,
I do my research on my films. I haven't seen any films. I have not seen one of them except for The Irishman, the only thing I've watched.
I think that's a tough conversation, but I will say that Olivia portrays her very well, and you do end up hating the character, and I think that's part of it being a movie, and it's based on a true story, but not everything in any movie based on a true story is factual. So I just think people need to do their research before they throw stones at anybody. So that would be how I would respond to that. But I found myself hating her, and I think that's the point of the movie, is to entertain you and make you feel something. So I'm not mad at Clint Eastwood for making a character that maybe wasn't that interesting a little bit more interesting.
To your point, Jackie, it's a fiction film. It's not a documentary. There were some people who said they didn't like The Irishman because they said, well, Frank Sheeran actually didn't kill Jimmy Hoffa. And I said, well, that's not the point. The point of the movie is not if it's true or not. The point of the film is about a meditation about aging and de-glamorizing mob lifestyle, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't agree with that.
Like, listen,
Johnny,
people, when you go to a movie theater, it's story time. Stories are not all factual. So I understand it. I understand why people would feel that way, but I don't necessarily completely agree with it.
I'm going to touch Jim's point to you. Did you notice the big error as a sports guy? Did you notice the big error in the movie?
I've not seen it, but I will watch for it now.
Jackie, was it Raddick? Who was pumping up Sandler front cut gyms? Was it EJ Raddick?
It was EJ Raddick. I'll ask him today, and I'll get back to you.
I guarantee I would have picked out the sports error. I might not be able to tell who's doing a good job acting, but I could find the sports error in the movie.
Oh, so good.
You know what? EJ will definitely know it because it's an ESPN thing. So please ask him for me.
Yeah, I will ask him, and then I will tweet you what he says so that you can get it immediately. Adnan, always a pleasure. I could talk to you all day about pretty much anything under the sun. We appreciate the time.
Jackie, you'll always be the greatest employee ever at the store. Mike Johnson closed second. Steve Kulias is in the mix, and Tim are there as well. You know you've made it when you've been on this podcast. And by the way, the reason you're letting me go, because as you said, we could talk for hours, I don't believe this is true, but Theo Fleury DM'd me and wants me on his podcast. I don't believe that it actually is Theo Fleury. I'm sure it's somebody pretending to be Theo Fleury, but I'm going to go pretend to be on Theo Fleury's podcast.
I'm jealous. That's amazing.
I'm reading the DM'd out. It's minus 50 here in Calgary today. I'm going to have to postpone our interview. Do you have time next week?
Right. Yeah, don't do that. But tell him we say hi.
I was about to say, do you think this actually is Theo Fleury? We need to check if it's minus 50 in Calgary.
It is.
And of course, for all the American listeners, yes, that is Celsius we're referring to. Otherwise, we'd all be dead.
Stay warm, Adnan.
All right, Jackie. Thanks, Mike.
He's the best, isn't he?
He loves movies.
He really genuinely passionate about film, yeah. and is good at it. I mean, he knows what he's talking about. He's not like you and I,
hang on, Jackie. Is he good at it?
What?
Like, so how is his opinion of a movie any more valid than yours?
Well, he watches more movies than me.
Oh, okay, I think volume, he knows, for sure.
I think that
you
he knows.
You can watch any movie and say, I watched The Joker. I thought
Listen,
that character
I'm not
was believable.
Saying that my opinion is invalid. I'm just saying that based on the number of films that he's seen and his understanding of character development and story arc is probably better than mine.
Probably, but that doesn't mean if he says that's good, any more valid than you selling that story arc is bad, whether you understand it or not. Movies are like a personal interpretation.
They're subjective. They're subjective. Yeah. 100% subjective.
So I'm giving you full props that you could do Cinephile Part 2. Whatever.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll see if Adnan brings me on his podcast to ask me about movies I haven't seen. But it's a good podcast. If you like movies, you should check it out. Let's get back to hockey, though, where I'm sure you have plenty of opinions for me. And I'm excited that it's you on the show because I know. Here's the thing. Not everybody is willing to go on one side of an argument. Sometimes we like to ride the fence, right? But I know you will have an opinion on this question. So we see Alex Ovechkin pass Teemu Selanne the other night on the all-time goals scored list as he inches closer to 700 and makes the conversation of catching the great one Wayne Gretzky a little bit more realistic. Yep. Still really hard to do for him, but realistic. Everyone's talking about will he do it, will he do it, can he do it? My question for you is not that. My question for you is, what would you rather see? Would you rather see Wayne Gretzky hold on to that record? Or do you think it would be better or more fun or however you want to phrase it to see Alex Ovechkin break it?
It pains me to say this because Wayne was my guy.
Yeah,
I grew up with Wayne Gretzky my age. Like he was my idol growing up. He was my coach at one point. I mean, so I have an affinity for Wayne Gretzky and all the records that he holds.
Yes.
But I do firmly believe that it would be a good thing
for the game,
for hockey, for him to beat it. Because one, the chase and the buildup will just be spectacular.
It'll be. Could you imagine?
Once he gets within 80, then we'll be counting down, and it'll be a media circus and a frenzy, and Gretz will have to go to every game that he's around it to be there to hand the torch over to him. I think it's fantastic. I think it's also great to appreciate that records, even the ones that you thought could never be broken, and 894, one, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I thought I'd never get broken. Gentlemen, 19 years, 18 years of
well, this is the
50 goals per year. That doesn't happen.
The goals scored record, I mean, this is one that people looked at as quote-unquote untouchable, right?
Yeah.
It's never going to be broken. Never, never, never. And that's why you never say never. Hashtag Justin Bieber, 894.
There you
but
go.
Listen, Ovi is the type of player, too, like, he doesn't get hurt. I know he's getting older.
Yeah.
For all the Caps fans to scream at me.
Because whether he can, I think, you know, it just depends on how long he wants to play. I mean, it feels like, should he stay healthy, this year he looks like he's going to score close to 50 again. You know, can he score 40, 35 to 40 goals a year for the next 4 or 5 years? Like, it feels like he can. He shoots it so well, and he's on a good team with good players. Backstrom re-upping, we can get into that a little bit later, too. But I think it would be good. Gretz, you can have the other 47
NHL records
you own.
Yeah.
But I think this will be good, and I think the points record that he has will probably never get touched either for Wayne. That one probably sits pretty comfortably way up there. But I think it would be great. It'd be great. And it's also new players. Like, not every best player in the history of the game played 20 years ago, 40 years ago. It's like, sometimes the best players in the world ever are happening right now.
Is it
and
more
that's
impressive,
not a bad thing.
I hate comparing eras, but I'm going to do
it. It's way more impressive.
It's more impressive,
way
right?
Way more impressive.
Better goaltending. It's a different game.
You can just do an era adjustment, simple math, and say, okay, when Gretz was playing his, when he scored 200 points a year and 92 goals, you know, there was an average of 7.8, 8.2 goals, whatever the number is. Obi played in eras where there was 5.4.
Yeah.
Like, if you just had his... inflated his numbers the same 37%. He would be there. You could make an argument now with very simple math that he is already the greatest goal scorer to ever play in the NHL.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's going to do it, you know, he kind of started post 04 work stoppage, so there was the influx of power plays. But still, goaltenders had never been better than the first 10 years of his career, peaking their save percentage up near 917. Like, he did it when it was harder to score than when Wayne did it.
And I agree with you, too, on it being good for the game if he's able to break it or at least come very,
or just
very
chase
close.
It.
Like, if he can come within, like, a really close range, that even that's good. Because here's the thing, and Wayne Gretzky is the GOAT. He's the greatest. He's unbelievable. I feel fortunate that I grew up in a time where I got to see him play a little bit. But for kids now, right?
Yes.
Gretzky is old news.
Yeah, he's archaic. Yeah.
But you think about it, like, the 80s are a long time ago. And so for kids today that are maybe just getting into hockey, just getting into sports, if they can see a guy like Alex Ovechkin chasing a record like that and the media circus that will follow it around, that's going to entice people to the game, I think.
For sure.
Yeah.
But you say if he gets close, he doesn't get it. If he gets close, then he doesn't stop playing. Like, I was like, if he gets to the end of the year and he's 14 away, then guess
what?
He's
just going
to
keep going.
He has to play the next year.
Yeah.
I don't care if he's 44. Like, play halfway through the year, put him out there for 5-on-3 and empty netters, get him 14 goals, and he can walk right off into the sunset.
You mentioned Nick Backstrom. We saw him re-up yesterday, 5-year extension.
So I put a call into him to be my agent going forward. Because this
impressive,
guy,
right?
Acting as his own agent, which does not happen. It happens a little bit in basketball because of max contracts and guys can just say, give me the max.
Right.
In hockey, there is a max contract, but guys don't get it. It's a little bit more involved. You kind of need an agent. And he took this on himself, and he's 33, got himself a 5-year deal, $9.246 million contract.
At 32, got himself a 5-year deal. I know he's Nick Backstrom, but still.
Yeah, to get that kind of term, like, that's great for him. No move protection, signing bonus provisions. I mean, like, he has a lot. And what was interesting, when he signed his previous deal, the percentage of the cap that he took up on the previous 10-year contract that he signed that is expiring is exactly the same as the percentage of the cap on his new year deal. 11.2%, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
It is almost the exact same number. So I wonder if he just saw, okay, well, that's what I got paid then, that's what I'll get paid
now. And he's
now
not losing 3-5% or whatever his former agent would have taken,
right? Your agent takes 3%. If you're going to make $40 million, quick math, that's 1.2.
It's a lot of money.
That he otherwise took on his own.
Now,
I love
interesting.
It. I love he did that.
We had him on NHL Now yesterday, and EJ, rightfully so, asked him the question, like, post-career, like, could you maybe be a player agent? And he goes, you know, I did it for the experience, but no. Like, he's like, I wanted to see behind the scenes, but no. Right. I'll just do it for myself. I don't need to do it for anyone else. So probably not the most enjoyable experience, but one that he wanted to just at least see what goes on and felt like he was comfortable enough with ownership there that he could do it.
He could be an agent so long as every client he has is as good as he is.
Yeah.
Be a pretty exclusive list of clients.
It's tougher. It's tougher, you know,
harder when you got guys
lower down the
two-way
total
deal
bowl
on the league minimum. It's a little bit different.
The other thing he said that was interesting to bring it back to Ovechkin, we talked to Backstrom the day after the Ovi stuff happened. He passed Timu. And I said, you know, do you think it's something that Ovi is thinking about now?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it all just about winning and we'll see where I'm at in a couple of years? And he said, no, I think he's thinking about it. He goes, I think he's thinking about it. For sure, and he wants to break it. So I think if Ovi wants to break it, he's going to play as long as he possibly can to try to do it.
Well, I mean, 200 away, roughly. You know, he's going to need probably 5 full and probably a 6th season.
Yeah.
Because 5 full would be 40 per average. Father Time is undefeated.
Yes.
So at some point, he'll slow down a little bit. So he probably needs a 6th year, and he'd get it during that 6th year. Can he play 6 more years?
I think he can.
He's leading the league in goals every year still. Like, why would we suggest that he couldn't?
Yeah, like, that's the thing. It's like, it's not like he's a player that over the last couple years has, like, slowed down a bit.
Right.
No.
I mean, he'll be into his 40s at that point. But listen, Yammer Yager was still an effective player in his 40s.
Yeah,
so,
fair.
So, you know, the very rarest of ones can do it. So I think it would be good for hockey if he was able to chase that down.
Oh, my gosh. It's going to be so much fun
It'd
to watch.
Wild.
Even just coming close.
Yeah.
It's going to be crazy.
It'd be good.
What do you think of the Caps this year? A Cup
What's
contender?
For sure. What's not to like? What's
what happens to Braden Holtby?
Well, when I see that Backstrom contract, I think Braden Holtby, unless he wants to take a significant two-year, $3 million a year,
yeah,
so like a significant pay cut and short term and everything else, then he probably walks. They're going to keep him all year. They're not going to at all.
Well,
trade
yeah,
him.
No.
They're going to bring him and Samsonov to the playoffs. They probably start Holtby if it doesn't go well. They have Samsonov there waiting in the wings, who's been fantastic this season. But I think the writing's on the wall. Because there's just not enough dollars. It's not that they don't want Braden Holtby, the person or the player, back. It's that we only have so many dollars to go around. We have a really good option that's much, much cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we going to do? We can't give it to you for, you know, because you're a good dude. So I think, and he knows that. So there'll be other jobs available for him this summer, but I don't think he returns unless he wants willing to take a pretty significant
Where
discount.
Where will Braden Holtby go? That is interesting. Should he leave?
Well, Chicago's got no goalies next year.
Oh, my gosh.
Buffalo needs goalies.
You mentioned Chicago. Let's get to some quick hitters, okay?
Right.
Because there's a lot that we did not get to this episode because of the breaking news off at the top.
Right.
So we're just going to rapid fire here. Give me your quick thoughts.
Okay.
We'll start with Chicago. Robin Leonard asked a question about taking a discount, his contract situation with the Blackhawks. The reporter in question said, you know, since they took a chance on you, Robin Leonard fires back and said, I chose to be here. I don't think they took a chance on me. Your thoughts on Leonard's response?
I love it. He says, they took a chance on me. I had 930, talking about a save percentage last year. I got a 922 for my career. I chose them. They didn't take any chance on me. I'm not taking a hometown discount.
I loved it.
I love it. Because he's right. It's fair. And I think he's willing to say, listen, any other goaltender puts up career numbers like I have and playing as well as he is this year. He's playing really well for Chicago, showing that he's not a system-made goalie from the Islanders. He deserves to get paid, and any other goalie probably would get paid. So I like it, though. I like that how honest he's willing to be.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he kind of put the reporter on the spot who had, sorry if that was a bad question.
Can't phrase it that way.
Yeah.
Coming off of Vezina caliber season,
so
you can't.
I like it. I like him keeping it real.
All right. Fair enough. But how about Austin Matthews and that sorcery with the stick flip? Should that be allowed?
No, it should not be allowed,
Why
Jackie?
Does it never get called? I mean, it doesn't happen
called.
Often, but it didn't get called with him, didn't get called with Fiala.
No, it does get called, though. It gets called specifically when they shoot it towards the opponent, not so much when they shoot it to their teammates. I think it's just kind of get lost, and it's not part of the play, so the referees maybe aren't drawn to why that puck, well, that stick is all of a sudden shooting up in the air. But, yeah, it was very slick. You can't have that happening, Jackie. What happens if I skate through there and all of a sudden I got a flying stick into my ear?
Fair.
And what happened? And then you're gonna let that go. So I'm trying to shoot it to my teammate Jackie Redmond, but I accidentally shoot it to the other player. Oopsie.
Not good.
You can't just let guys start shooting equipment around the ice at people, whether it's to the right target or not. So it looks so smooth, just like everything Austin Matthews does. I'd be curious if we put him on a polygraph. Say, Austin, did you know that's a penalty? What you just did?
Yeah.
I bet he says no. I bet he had no idea.
Really?
Guys don't know the rules. All the time.
Guys don't know the rules at all.
No, there's a handful. That one being one of them. The other one, we just saw it last week. You got to step out of the penalty box before you can touch the puck.
Right.
We see guys do it all the time.
Yeah.
And they go right back in the penalty box for, I guess, interference, I guess it's called. So there's a few rules that guys are not aware of. That being one of them.
Oh, my gosh. All right, the lacrosse goal is here to stay, clearly.
Yes.
Is it a lacrosse goal? Is it the Svech? Is it the Michigan? What is it?
It's the Mike Legg. Huh? Which is the guy who did it at Michigan. And that is like, that's it.
So it's not even, Michigan's not even good enough for you.
I mean, Michigan's
okay. It's a Mike Legg goal.
Michigan's, if you have to go somewhere with it, you can't think of Mike
You'll
Legg.
You'll accept it.
I'll tolerate Michigan, and then I will correct you and say it's actually the Mike Legg.
It's the Svech.
And even Legg didn't.
It's the Svech.
It's not even close to the Svech.
He did it first in the NHL.
Doesn't matter.
And he did it twice.
He did.
It's got to be the Svech.
It's not.
I don't know. Hit us up. Hashtag
Why do you think Svech does it? Where did it grow in popularity? Because even Mike Legg wasn't the first person to do it.
Who inspired it?
It was Armstrong. Guy last name Armstrong in the IHL was doing them all the time in the mid-90s.
This is going to be a debate that just rages on for all of time.
It's called the Mike Legg. Credit where credit's due. Svech will be known as the first guy, but it's the Legger.
The Svech. All right. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much flack do you think Jason Zucker is getting from his teammates right now after his wife paid Charlie Coyle, not on his team, mm-hmm. to record a cameo video talking to him like he's about 5 years old.
I think it's amazing. Like, it's just brilliant, and it's great. What a fun relationship the Zuckers seem to have.
Yeah, honestly, like, give them a reality show. Can we get a Zuckers reality show?
It's tremendous, and he'll be taking a lot of heat, but that's the whole point.
Yeah.
And good for Charlie Coyne for playing along and doing a pretty good job delivering his get better soon message.
His straight face. Yes. He said it took him 10 tries because he couldn't get through it without laughing. Like, he could not read the script. Carly's the best. I just need more Carly Zucker in my life all the time. Reality show, someone do it.
What do you think of Brad Marchand?
That's where I was just going to go.
His
could it have happened?
Speed bobble to a more perfect guy.
Oh my gosh.
Not that we're rooting ill on Brad Marchand. It's just that he's got the personality to make it even more lively of a conversation. If it was some rookie, Mike Johnson skated in, it would be like,
you feel bad.
It would be embarrassing and kind of demoralizing.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, I can't even make fun of that guy.
I think even Brad Marchand, though, it bugs him a little.
Of course it does.
It bugs him.
Of course he's human.
Yeah.
And he's got thick skin, but it's not that thick. And you see him, you know, piping, okay, clapping
so,
back at some people
so
on Twitter.
Here, I want to get to that because I got fired up yesterday, mm-hmm. and I held back a little
Friday?
Bit.
No,
it wasn't.
Friday, yeah.
It's fired up Wednesday.
Okay, it's a wacky Wednesday.
Here's the thing, and I didn't tweet out my full thoughts because I just didn't want to deal with the wrath of Twitter because sometimes it's just...
It's an avalanche.
I wasn't having it yesterday. But, you know, Brad Marchand, this happens to him, one of the worst shootout gaffes of all time. You could put it on the list.
It can't be one of. It's got to be the.
It's
there
pretty
could
bad.
Never be a worse one than that.
It's pretty bad.
He didn't touch the puck. He just touched it enough so it couldn't count.
And he was looking at it.
He couldn't even do that again if he tried, Jackie.
I would be more understandable if, like, he was looking off somewhere. But, like, he's looking at the puck, at the ice, and he misses it.
Yeah.
And I thought it was hilarious. We played it on the show yet. Like, and I was just with everybody else. I was laughing along, just like everyone else on Twitter. However, I open Twitter, and I see that Brad Marchand has tweeted out the picture of him kissing the cup,
sure.
which a lot of people are like, oh, that wasn't even this decade, ha, ha, ha. Make the jokes. Make all of the jokes.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I'm sure lots of people have seen this. One person in particular went, oh, my gosh, even I can pick up the puck clean when I'm in a shootout.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck or something, get better. Like, really, really chirping him, which, again, I'm fine with.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Marchand comes back and says something to the effect of, your shootout's in your driveway. You pretend to be me. Dream big, bud, which I thought was funny.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people on Twitter started coming at Brad Marchand, and even when I retweeted it saying this thread's hilarious, people were like, how can you support that? It's so classless. He should be a bigger man. You can't speak down to hockey fans like that. No, like, if you're going to come at someone on Twitter and throw bows and chirp them and make fun of them at their handle, like making sure that there's a potential for them to see it, you deserve what you get. You can't go.
Why is it okay for that guy to chirp Brad as hard as he can, and Brad can't say anything back?
Exactly.
Like, he didn't say anything derogatory about his family or his kids or his life.
He said, "I'm a professional athlete, and you're not."
And you're and you wish you could play hockey as well as I could.
Which hockey fans probably do.
I wish I could play.
I wish I could play as good as Brad Marchand.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so, like, to me, I'm just like, I hate when people get on their high horse on Twitter and go, "I can dish it out," but you're not allowed to give it back to me because different standards apply to me than apply to you. I just hate that. Like, no, if you're going
to
chirp Brad Marchand, you
be
deal with him coming back.
Back
at you. And he didn't say anything that bad. I mean, he just said, I'm living your dream, which is, in all likelihood, probably accurate.
Yeah. There are
probably
some things you can't say, but that wasn't one of them.
Exactly.
He may not like it, but to suggest he can't.
To say it's classless.
We're not going to get a social media rant, but why people think that they can say whatever they want to any person that they...
Just because they're a public figure.
A public figure and say anything about...
Yeah.
About their job, about their looks, about their... Anything. And then that's okay.
Yeah.
And then you say something back to them as a public figure, and that's not?
Yeah.
That's...
He chirped you back. That's all it was.
There was
nothing...
It's a back and forth. You started it.
Yes, exactly. So if you don't want don't include the handle, because you're especially with Brad Marchand of all people.
What's
you
that?
Know he's
Someone
gonna respond.
Iron, you come at the king, you best not miss. Like, you're gonna go at him.
Well
be
said.
Ready for a comeback.
That's a good note to end on. But Gerard Gallant, over under how many days before he's employed again? If you had to just betting man.
34.
All right, we shall see what the future for Gerard Gallant holds. For now, it's Peter DeBoer taking over as head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights. Give us your thoughts using the hashtag Puck Culture. Thank you guys for listening so much. You're back next week, right?
I'm back next week.
Can't
get rid of me now.
Back next week. Thank you for listening. And also thank you for those of you watching on YouTube. We appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll see you next time.